Coming up on today's edition of the Next Fan Up podcast.
I got to tell you, Colin Cowherd's got nothing on you when it comes to metaphors, Neil.
He's going to get burned more often than the bread in my toaster. All defense. Right. Defense. Dallas doesn't have a defense. I mean, Andrew Luck, he's been injured so often. I guess, you know, if he was a horse, somebody would have shot him already.
Let's get it all started previewing week one of the NFL preseason. Here we go.
I had the game on mute, so I wasn't listening to any of the commentation.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a feisty edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. I am Pod Vader here with five super fans, and it's feisty because we've got preseason games to talk about. Not real football games, but there are football games happening. We had one that kicked off last night. We'll recap the Texans and the Panthers in just a moment, and we're going to preview all of the week one games, what the super fans are at least watching for in each of these games, and tell you why if you do end up watching these games, and they'll all be available at some point on the NFL Network, what it is that you should be watching for in these games. Because we know it's not for wins and losses. And if you are watching it for wins and losses and you're actually betting on these games, please find yourself some help. You need it. All right. Let me introduce to you the five super fans that are joining me on today's show, and we will start across the pond with our Washington Redskins super fan, Neil. Hello, Neil.
Hey, Jay, how you doing? You could just tell Rob for me, because I'm not speaking to him anymore, that he's not taking Washington's mediocrity away. We own mediocrity. He's not having it.
Neil is referencing Rob, our Buffalo Bills super fan. They were getting into it over which team has a better chance at a Super Bowl, the Bills or the Redskins. And Rob, you claim it's the Redskins.
Well, I mean, I feel like the Buffalo Bills have had the mediocre market cornered for the past 18 years. So how dare you, Neil, try to hoard in on our market?
Speaking of mediocre, the team that I feel defines mediocrity, at least represented out of the teams here, would be in Houston, and that is the Texans. Hello, James.
Howdy, Jay. Well, I mean, we're talking about mediocrity. We're three people deep and have yet to bring up the name Jeff Fisher, who is the embodiment of mediocrity. So until he gets his next NFL coaching gig, which I am desperately holding out for so he can set the all-time loss record.
The team that is hoping mediocrity comes and visits them because it would be an improvement. That is the Philadelphia Eagles. Hi, James.
Whoa. We were mediocre last year with a rookie quarterback. We're looking for a step up this year, trying to crack that playoff ceiling.
I'm sorry. Did you not have a losing record last year?
Hey, 77-9 is still mediocre. Ask Jeff Fisher.
Interesting thought. And a team that is no longer mediocre and high expectations have been placed, the Dallas Cowboys, joining us from Prison Zone 6. It's Kevin. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, Pod. Hey, everyone. Yeah, I mean, the Cowboys rarely put two consecutive good seasons together. It's been a while, so we're praying over here that that does happen. But yeah, to comment on the Eagles, I would say last season was mediocre. 100% agree with Pod. And we can talk later, James.
If you believe your team holds the title for mediocrity, send in those emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast. You can reach us on our Facebook page. Just search Next Fan Up while you're in Facebook, or go to facebook.com/NFU podcast. We have a whole bunch of stuff happening on our website. If you go to nextfanup.wordpress.com, you can check out what all of the superfans wrote, except for the following superfans who feel shame in preseason week one for not posting previews to their games. That is MJ, our Atlanta Falcons superfan, Andy, our Dolphins superfan, who often joins us on Thursdays, Don, our Ravens superfan, who also often joins us on Thursdays, Patrick, the Patriots superfan, and let's face it, Patrick,
there's another Patriots superfan already on this podcast. That is not a good thing for you. The Jaguars superfan, Ryan. Sam, our Giants superfan, but he's getting a pass because he's already reached out to me and he's basically off for the summer. Jared, our Rams superfan. Andrew, our Jets superfan. Matt, our Titans superfan, who's one of our newest. Ken, our Chargers superfan, apparently too busy doing other things. And Kevin? Feel shame.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes.
Now that's mediocrity.
That's worse. That is worse than mediocrity.
In my defense, I've had a very busy week at work, and I think this is the first preview I've missed since I joined last October. But duly noted, I'll never miss again.
All defense. Right. Defense. Dallas doesn't have a defense.
That's well done. Before we jump into the recap and the preview of the games, one news note that I wanted to get into, and no, Rob, it will not be Anquan Boldin signing with the Buffalo Bills. The NFL announced that they will hire full-time referees. Woo! Yay! Refereeing will be solved. We'll have great refs from now on, right? They're never going to miss a call ever again, right?
But if I'm not back next season, you'll know why.
Because you're going to become a full-time referee?
Hey, well, I might as well apply for it.
It's not a bad gig.
Jay, we did this in soccer over here a number of years ago, you know, where they were all became full-time referees after they were, you know, the amateurs doing their day jobs and all the rest of it. And I can tell you, it's been good for the refs because they're all on a six-figure salary. But I tell you, it has made absolutely no difference to the game at all, apart from the fact that the referees can run fast enough because they're fit enough to make bad decisions.
Yeah, I don't feel that this is necessarily going to improve officiating in any sense of the word. I do think that there are obviously some benefits to having full-time referees. Now, my understanding is that the refs will still be able to keep other jobs, but the NFL has to be their first priority. This sounds like not a change at all, but they also
not uncommon language for contracts, though.
Interesting.
Rob? The one change I did see and kind of with this stuff happening is that they are going to now have a voice on other things that they didn't before, like the competition committee, things like that. So, you know, kind of bring a different perspective, which may be able to, you know, possibly help in minute ways, you know, along the way. But it's only, 24 out of the, how many officials are there? 100 and something.
124.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a start, but I feel this is more of a PR move than anything else.
Yes. The other thing is they have to be available to attend a meeting within 48 hours. So while they don't need to relocate to New York, they have to be able to get to New York in less than 2 days. So if you're stuck.
Hey, Kevin, up in Prison Zone 6, is that even possible to get to downtown New York with the current state of their transit system?
Fortunately for me, I don't need to use the subway to get to work, but it is a disaster over here this summer. It really is, especially coming from Brooklyn and Queens. Thank God I actually live in Manhattan, so I don't need to use those crappy subway lines. But yeah, a lot of people are not happy, that's for sure.
Let's talk a little bit about the game that was played last evening. It was the Houston Texans and the Carolina Panthers. Panthers came away with a win 27-17, but that's not what we really care about. Houston, James, we care about Deshaun Watson because that's what everybody else is caring about right now.
Oh yeah. Lots of talk about how he just, lit it up, how he turned my favorite headline from last night was how he turned the Charlotte crowd in his favor, which is not at all surprising considering it's a preseason game. The Carolina Panthers were winning. He had a good play, and he played in Clemson. So there were quite a few Clemson jerseys out in the out in the stadium last night. Tom Savage started the game. He went 0 for everything on his first two drives.
Carolina's defense looked back from 2 years ago. I mean, it looked impressive. They put pressure on Savage, both of his first two dropbacks, as well as stuffing the running back for a loss on basically the only meaningful snaps that Luke Kuechly played. Once the second stringers for Carolina went in, things changed. Savage actually ended up going 8 for 8 and looked halfway competent. Then Deshaun Watson came in. You know, the stat line, 15 to 25, you know, for about 180 yards. But the big play, of course, was a 15-yard touchdown run. He did look good. He did have some, you know, some rookie mistakes, overthrowing a couple guys, missing a couple of open reads. Nothing that would be unexpected for a rookie. You know, we kind of have to temper expectations based on what the reports are out there. He did play good. He did not play, you know, second coming of Russell Wilson good or great. But, I mean, he looked like a competent NFL starter, which compared to the rest of the Houston Texans, looks really good. You know, so I basically gauge the defense and how hard they're playing based on how well our poor running back Alfred Blue does. He was able to do, you know, 5 rushes for like 33 yards and a touchdown. So he did all of his damage with a bad or the backup Carolina defense in. And it's the exact same for Deshaun Watson. We talked a little bit going on or, you know, on the Slack group last night. If and when the Texans transition from Savage to Watson, it's going to be, you know, a game or two of growing pains because, you know, Watson has that ability to get outside the pocket, whereas Savage just basically stands there. And if he steps up in the pocket, that's a lot of movement for him. So that led to a lot of holding calls, quite a few false start calls when they transitioned from Savage to Watson. I think we ended up with 12 penalties for like 91 yards. And then, not to harp too much on the special teams play, but you know, Houston is also going to be right there at the bottom of the league again in special teams. They made the great decision of taking one out of the end zone from 5 yards deep. They managed to make it out to about the 19-yard line before that was brought back for a holding call. So instead of starting at the 25, they managed to start at their own 7-yard line. They tackled a punt returner before he actually caught the ball, so that was fun. And the only Shane Leckler punt that got into the 20 or into Carolina's 20. Houston had two guys there to two guys deep, ready to tackle him. Carolina Panthers guy was able to escape for a 13-yard gain. So, you know, between the shoddy special teams and the poor penalties, Houston just kind of gave up close to 200 yards of equivalent offense.
The one thing I saw, and I didn't watch the game last night, but I did watch some of the highlights online. The thing I saw out of Deshaun Watson was his pocket movement. It did seem to be more present than Tom Savage's, for sure. He looked like he moved around well. Now, I didn't, because I only saw highlights, I didn't see any of his lowlights. So I don't know about these 10 passes that he didn't complete. He was 15 of 25. Two of those completions, though, were for a total of 55 yards. So even though I went to Emerson College and my math is a little shaky, 13 completions for 120-ish yards is still less than 10 yards of reception.
Yep, that is how math works.
Thank you.
His receivers weren't really helping him out. They were doing a lot of check down passes. You can see in the box score that a lot of the running backs were pretty high up there in passing totals. They weren't taking a lot of shots downfield. They were basically just auditioning off. I think they've got 8 running backs on the roster right now, or 7 running backs on the roster right now. So they're just basically auditioning who can play those particular roles. And then with as bad as the offensive line was playing, which should compete with Seattle for the worst out there, that's not exactly helped by the holdout of Dwayne Brown. But he didn't have a whole lot of time, except they did a couple of designed rollouts that bought him a lot of time to hit those 2 deep passes. But no, it was encouraging to kind of see him hit those checkdowns, hit what the defense was giving him. It was discouraging to see that, you know, the offensive line just could not generate enough of a push to give him the time that he needed to get down to his, you know, second or third option.
Now, from the Panther side of the ball, Cam Newton didn't throw. We know he's been dealing with the arm injury. I did see him cheerleading on the sidelines. Also, Kelvin Benjamin. Were the reports of Kelvin Benjamin a little exaggerated? He didn't look that fat. He didn't look Eddie Lacy fat to me.
He was definitely not Eddie Lacy fat. He was a healthy husky, I guess. He was a little bit bigger than what he came in, but I mean, he played like an absolute beast in the few series that he did play. He made an outstanding catch for his touchdown. That was a little bit of picking on the corner. I believe it was Jackson for that particular play. But his other reception was a nice catch and run set up by Derek Anderson where, it was a 17-yard game that I think the ball traveled a grand total of like 6 yards, 5 or 6 yards down the field. And then he just out-muscled a couple of defenders. So he's looking good.
Neil, I know you have some questions here about the game last night. Of course, I go to Neil as he's muted.
Yeah, sorry, Jay. Doing other things. James, I was wondering from a Panthers point of view. Sorry, and I don't have, well, I have one Texans question. I was wondering if JJ Watt saw any playing time at all.
Yep, JJ Watt played a series. Said it was good to be back. He did not get carted off the field or anything, so that's encouraging.
Yeah,
I guess we'll see today how he responds to having played, but. That's more preseason work than he typically gets.
Mm. It's going to be great to see him and Clowney on the field at the same time, both fit. That'd be great. What about Curtis Samuel? He wouldn't have played last night for the Panthers, would he? The second round pick. Is it Curtis Samuel? It's not the right name, is it? Chris Samuel? No, who knows? The running back.
Christian McCaffrey?
No, Samuel.
Samuel
second
from
round.
Ohio State.
Yeah, Samuel.
I did not see Samuel. I had the game on mute, so I wasn't listening to any of the commentation. But I didn't see Samuel out there. I don't believe he dressed. But I mean, to get up to Christian he looked good against the Houston ones. He looked like an NFL ready running back. He didn't quite look like the answer to life, the universe, and everything. Once the second teamers got in there, he ripped off a couple of good plays and, it looks like they're going to be able to incorporate him well into the offense. They weren't running anything too exotic. You didn't see anything. I think they split him out wide once or twice, but, you could definitely see the potential where they would have, a lot of options for him either out of the backfield or split wide.
And did the Panthers O-line look any good at all?
You know, they held their own against the Houston ones. So, as long as they're officiated well, I think Cam Newton will survive and he's not doing crazy runs all the time. Even if he is and he can't start the season, Derek Anderson looked competent. He looked better than any Browns quarterback or former Browns quarterback has in a long time.
All right, guys, why don't we get into the previews at this point? And we will start with Thursday night, 7 p.m., Atlanta Falcons at the Miami Dolphins. And Eagles, James, I have assigned this game to you. What are we watching for here?
Obviously, if you're a Falcons fan, you're looking at Tack McKinley, first-round draft pick from this year. You're also looking to see how this team bounces back depending on how much the first unit plays in both offense and defense from that catastrophic Super Bowl loss. On the Miami side, you want to see how Matt Moore plays because until Cutler's ready, he's your starter. And I'm not sure if Ajayi is out of the concussion protocol, but I don't expect to see him tonight for Miami. On defense, Ndamukong Suh in that group, you want to see them actually step it up a little bit and probably become a little bit more solid in the secondary.
All right, Neil, you say you've got some notes on the Atlanta Falcons for us.
Yeah, I took the time today to wander down into the dark, dingy office of finance in Aberdeenshire and spoke to emailer Sean about the Atlanta Falcons just to see what he was kind of looking for in tonight's game. He's very much looking forward to seeing draft pick Duke Riley, who's a young linebacker. He wants to see how he is incorporated into the squad. He's also looking at DeMonte Casey, who's a free safety. He thinks he could be going to be starting. And he's looking at the right guard battle, which is between Ben Garland and Wes Schweitzer. And he's kind of hoping Garland wins that battle at right guard. And he's heard a lot that Eric Sobert has had a tight end who's had a very good camp, and he wants to see if he can challenge, I think it's Austin Hooper they have down there at tight end, because they're looking for a tight end to complement that offense. That's what he's looking for in the game.
Eagles James, you need to tell your friend MJ that Neil's got a guy down in finance who's ready to take over as the Falcons super fan.
I'll be sure to pass that message along.
All right. Next game on the docket is Vikings at Bills, also kicking off at 7 p.m. Eastern. The Bills superfan Rob is here with that preview.
All right. For this game, there's a couple things I'm looking forward to. For the Bills, I could probably think of about 1,000 things I'm looking forward to. But some things just kind of, step out to me. The tight end position, Bills are going to be running an offense using a lot of two tight end play. And a name that a lot of you are probably familiar with, but not as a tight end, but as a quarterback, has been really kind of working his way up the depth chart in Buffalo. Logan Thomas, who used to be a quarterback for Virginia Tech and then was drafted as a quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals, didn't work out, but he's a big-bodied guy. He's killed it in camp this year. He was kind of, one of the last 90 to start camp. He's worked his way up to the number three role. I think he can play his way into the number two spot. I'm really looking forward to seeing how he plays. I'm looking forward to see how the defense does just in general. It's going to be a completely different scheme. They're going from the Rex Ryan 3-4. Let's drop defensive tackles into coverage and see how fun that could be. To go into more of like a cover two shell with other looks, kind of like a cover three, similar to the stuff that you probably see a little bit in Seattle. So I'm looking forward to see how everything goes with that. Obviously, it's a preseason. They're not going to show too much. Also looking forward to hoping to see Anquan Boldin just in a Bills uniform. I don't know if everybody heard, but he signed with the Bills a couple days ago. He's going to play in the slot for them. So that'll be fun. He played 80% of his snaps in the slot last year in Detroit, and he had a very productive season. And to answer Neil from our little chat box, yes, Sammy Watkins still does have 2 feet. Both are healthy. And see how that goes. And then the other thing I'm interested to see is Reggie Ragland and kind of what happens with him. He has been demoted to the third team. Middle linebacker. I think the Bills are going to trade him this offseason because he really just isn't a fit. He can't really cover too much. And then the last thing, Zay Jones, which Neil also mentioned in our chat box. I'm looking forward to seeing him. He's kind of in a battle with a couple receivers for the outside receiver spot. I think that Bolden's going to be the slot guy. I think he's going to win the job. He's looked really good in camp, so I think that'll be fun. Minnesota, just a couple pieces. I'm interested to see kind of their offensive line. They were terrible last year, and they've added quite a few new pieces. I'd like to see kind of how they gel. I expect the offensive line to get a little bit better. And then lastly, Dalvin Cook. I would really looking forward to see if he gets, a couple series with the ones. I'm sure he will. Latavius Murray, I think, is still on pup. So he's going to probably get Murray's a little bit of playing time. What's that?
Murray's off pup. He came off pup a couple days ago. But I do.
Oh, did he? Okay.
I suspect Cook is going to run with the ones.
Yeah.
Murray will get much run at all.
Yeah, I think Cook is the more talented of the two. Interesting to see. he fell a lot during the draft process, and you know, it's going to be a good opportunity to kind of see what was real. So, you know, from Minnesota's point of view, that's kind of what I'm looking for.
All right. The next game on the docket is the Washington Redskins at the Baltimore Ravens, 7:30 p.m. Eastern kickoff. So, Neil, a little bit, half an hour later for you.
Yep, half an hour later, but obviously considerably better. For the Baltimore Ravens, it's going to be a question for them about the offense. We're going to see Ryan Mallett, of course, because what's his name? Flacco is still injured. So can Ryan Mallett run the first team offense in a game? It'll be a really interesting one to see if he's replaced halfway through with our good friend Dusty Vaughn. I'm hoping so. They signed Tony Jefferson, safety, in the offseason as a free agent, and they'll be wanting to incorporate him into the defense. That's a really great signing. I really like that one. I would like him at Washington. And, of course, first-round pick Marlon Humphrey will get his first taste of action on the outside at cornerback. And they'll also be looking at the guy they picked up. Was that last week? Austin Howard, the right tackle from the Oakland Raiders. They picked him up as a free agent. See if he can get some time at right tackle on the offensive line. For Washington, it's interesting. For a team that is really fairly mediocre, there's actually not a lot of battles in camp this year. Inside linebacker, can Mason Foster hold off Zach Brown, the ex-Buffalo Bill, and I believe Pro Bowler last year? So far, he's doing that in camp, and Brown is the third guy. But I think Zach Brown will eventually take over inside linebacker. I guess everybody's thinking the same thing here. It's all about injuries, isn't it? We just don't want to see guys getting injured. And yeah, we've already got Josh Doctson, who missed all of last year. He's got a bit of a hamstring. Also, Junior Gallette. He's had a good camp, but again, a slight tightness in his hamstring. So he'll be off down to the beach to chase some women around, no doubt. And in the meantime, while that's happening, we'll be looking at our new safety pairing. Now, Washington has not had a good safety since the days of Sean Taylor, which must be, what, nearly 10 years ago now? And we're this year, our two great hopes are Sua Cravens, last year's rookie, who is transitioning from a sort of linebackery sort of spot into the strong safety spot. But as it is with modern NFL, he's kind of going to be playing just in that space behind the defensive line, I think, and in the box. Is that what they call it these days? And we'll see how he gets on. I'm not sure if he's a safety. I think he's a role player, but we'll see. And DJ Swearinger, who came across, I'm going to say that was a Cardinals he came across for, but I think he was originally drafted by Texans James's team a couple of years ago. He's going to be playing at free safety. I don't like him one bit, Jay. I think he's going to get burned more often than the bread in my toaster. So we'll see how that goes down. But yeah, just two things for Washington: don't get Mullard and don't get injured. That's the two rules for Washington's offseason.
I got to tell you, Colin Cowherd's got nothing on you when it comes to metaphors, Neil. Fantastic work.
You're welcome.
The next game, 7:30 p.m. kickoff, Jaguars at the Patriots. Ooh, this is me. Let me start with the Jaguars, because Ryan, our Jaguar super fan, is feeling shame, leaving me to whatever NFL.com has to say about the Jaguars on this game. And their whole thing is about Cam Robinson debuting as the team's left tackle. Well, guess what? Cam Robinson's only going to play for, what, a quarter, if we're lucky? And it's not going to be against a lot of the number ones from the Patriots defense. So really not going to be able to tell all that much about Cam Robinson in this game. This is why you listen to our podcast, because these guys at NFL.com aren't going to give you a breakdown about whose toast is burning and all that good stuff. All right. I would say from a Jaguars perspective, since I was at Patriots training camp on Monday, and you know this because I did a special edition podcast with my son, sort of talking about my observations from Patriots training camp where they practiced together with the Jacksonville Jaguars. You can listen to that if you subscribe to the podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, etc. So you can hear what I saw at Patriots training camp, a joint camp with the Jaguars on Monday. I would say for Jaguars folks, you want to see some depth start to develop behind those offensive weapons that they have running with the ones. I didn't see Leonard Fournette run with the ones very much at training camp, so I imagine Fournette is actually going to get a lot of run in this particular game with the twos and the threes. Yeldon and Ivory were the two main guys that were running with the first string offense, which was a little bit of a surprise to me on Monday. I thought Fournette would be in that spot, but he wasn't. So I expect to see a lot of Leonard Fournette as a Jaguars fan. Also, I mentioned the depth behind that wide receiver position. Allen Hurns, Allen Robinson seemed to be good. I believe it was Robinson that got hurt on Monday. And that moved Marquise Lee, who was having a pretty good practice in the slot, moved him to the outside, giving Rashad Greene those slot spots. And I mentioned in my special podcast that I do believe the slot receiver is going to have a lot of value, especially fantasy wise for Jaguars fans. So that's going to be something that I'd be watching. On the Patriots side, I'm watching Jimmy Garoppolo because everything is about Jimmy Garoppolo these days in New England. I don't suspect the ones are going to get a lot of run. On my way home from Patriots training camp, I heard Boston Sports Talk going crazy that Jimmy Garoppolo just doesn't have that fire. He wasn't all fired up to take the job from Tom Brady. He's gone the other way. Garoppolo is going to be just fine. Relax, as Aaron Rodgers likes to say. If you're getting all jacked up over the backup quarterback, then you know that there's not a lot of issues going on with your team. What I do expect to see out of Garoppolo, though, in this game is him dominate against those twos and the threes so that he can prove he belongs as a starting quarterback in the NFL. That's what I'm watching for, and that's what I'm hoping to see. Devin Lucien, by the way, a wide receiver to keep note of. He's impressed in camp. He's had some pretty good catches that were thrown by Jimmy Garoppolo. So he's a guy that could end up being a camp casualty who will end up elsewhere. Neil asks, who replaces Rob Ninkovich? Good question, Neil, because I don't believe I brought this up on the special podcast. The two guys to watch for are rookies, Dietrich Weiss, who they drafted in the middle rounds, and Harvey Langi, Longi, L-A-N-G-I, I believe it's pronounced Longi, though, an undrafted free agent, have been playing in that spot and impressing in camp. So definitely watch for that position. Thanks for the heads up, Neil. Eagles at Packers kickoff at 8 p.m. Eagles, James, that's you. Trust me, Cowboys Kevin is on this call. He really is.
I am. I really am. I'm just waiting patiently.
He already had a game last week.
All right, Eagles, James. Eagles at Packers.
Starting with the Packers, and probably very briefly here, we know that Aaron Rodgers is not going to play tonight. For the Packers side, offensively, I'm looking at Ty Montgomery. He's put on a couple of extra pounds to play running back primarily this season. They will split him out wide into the slot position as the formations dictate. Martellus Bennett, newcomer over at tight end, taking over that role. See how he performs with the ones. On defense, I'm looking at the secondary. And matter of fact, that's going to be a trend for both teams as a transition to Philadelphia. Secondaries for both these teams overall were pretty much abysmal last year. And if you don't remember what the Packers corners look like, I refer you to look back to the NFC Championship game against the Falcons as they were getting torched left and right. Same thing with the Eagles corners. All the veterans, all the rookies, everybody. We've overhauled that position, brought in some new people, Patrick Robinson, Mills,
you know, these guys are pretty much going to be under the spotlight going up against, you know, whoever's starting out there going up against the ones. On defense, I'm looking at our first round pick, Derek Barnett, see how he plays when he's given his shot, see if he can actually make a push to get up into the eight-man rotation for our defensive line that we like to run out there. On offense, I'm looking at a lot here. Wendell Smallwood primarily to see how he performs tonight, given his chance to play, to see if he can actually get into the running back rotation, which I expect to primarily be Blunt and Sproles. We need a third man in there to spell them from time to time. And if Smallwood can become more consistent and improve his blocking, which hopefully shows tonight, then I think he'll be that third man in that primary running back rotation. We will not see, at least I don't expect to see much of Alshon Jeffrey tonight. Of course, Carson Wentz, see how, you know, he takes up the reins, having a full offseason as the starter to perform. I'm confident that he will play well. I'm not saying that, you know, he's going to, you know, tear the roof off the place or anything like that, but I expect a step up in year two. And Nelson Aguilar, who don't remember this guy from last year, that's not a bad thing because I barely remember him either because he had hands of stone. He couldn't catch a cold in the phone booth if he tried. So apparently he's playing better right now in camp and has been challenging Jordan Matthews for the spot at slot receiver, which I find very interesting because unless Jordan Matthews is pretty much banged up and hobbled, there should be no competition there. But we'll see how those two are deployed tonight in the offensive set when the Eagles have the ball with their first unit, depending on how long those starters play to see how Matthews and Aguilar are deployed in the formations. So that'll pretty much be a lot to tell as far as how that battle goes throughout camp.
All right. The Saints are at the Browns. That's an 8 p.m. kickoff. And this one is, it's Houston James.
Oh, yeah. We're keeping New York down. We're showing our cosmopolitan bias here on the Next Fan Up. So, instead of New York, we're going to Seattle. Saints and Browns. At least they're going to give Brock Osweiler a crappy defense to play against in his debut as a Brown. I do not begrudge the man for making a lot of money for doing mediocre things, but I'm glad that he's gone. So, however, I mean, you've got Cody Kessler, Brock Osweiler, and you've got DeShone Kizer that should all be competing for snaps here in the preseason. You know, that'll be fun to see, especially against a New Orleans State defense that revamped itself a little bit this offseason. They actually spent draft picks on defensive players. I guess somebody got the memo to Sean Payton that they don't have a separate defensive draft later in the year for the NFL. So he didn't get an offensive weapon until, I think, their fourth pick, which was their second pick in the third round. Other things to watch for. Is just going to be how good Corey Coleman looks. This will be his second year. And then our Cleveland superfan Ben is also curious if Hugh is going to kind of get off this pass wacky scheme he's been running and actually run the ball. That will predicate that the Cleveland offensive line is going to have to play pretty well in order to have an established run game. But, it's probably not a bad idea for Cleveland to not throw the ball with the heated competition between Brock Osweiler, Cody Kessler, and DeShone Kizer that it is. The other thing that he's concerned with is how bad Peppers is going to be on most plays and how well the secondary plays. And as far as that secondary goes, they should get a good test. Drew Brees usually plays a series or two, at least in the first preseason game. For New Orleans, they're kind of like the anti-Patriots in that they do not have a clear path to what life is going to be like past Drew Brees. So it'll be interesting to see how their backups play tonight, and then as well as who's going to establish themselves, as the key receiving threats.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I bring to you our Cowboys superfan, who was assigned the game that will be on the NFL Network at 8 p.m., the Denver Broncos at Chicago Bears. Kevin.
Oh, thank you. I'm fine. Oh, wow. Let me get my vocal cords with me here. Yeah. So obviously the Broncos Bears matchup, I guess what people should be looking forward to the most is seeing Glennon and Trubisky and see who ends up having the better game. I think Glennon's going to start out here and then Trubisky will relieve him. I mean, I know I'm excited to see Trubisky play, just because personally I don't think he's going to be very good. So I always like to see when players go out there and struggle, especially when that proves me right. No offense, Trubisky. But other than that, for the Bears, that I'm looking forward to seeing their front seven as well, because over the last few years, they've definitely tried to improve that. Leonard Floyd had a pretty good year last year. So let's see how they show up in week one. They're of course not going to play very long, but it would be interesting to see if Leonard Floyd has improved at all since last year. And the Bears offense line, it's sort of trending upwards. I know they drafted a center last year. I'm forgetting his name, but he was a very impressive rookie. Of course they have Kyle Long. So that's going to be fun to watch to see how that new unit sort of plays together. And then as far as the Broncos, of course, I'm going to be looking at Garrett Bowles, the massive offense lineman who no one even talked about really pre-draft about his off-the-field problems, being kicked out of five schools, and I still don't know why. But it's going to be cool to see him play left tackle. I know that he was penalized a lot at Utah, so it's going to be good to see if his technique has improved. I'll be looking forward to also seeing my old buddy Ronald Leary at left guard there. And then, of course, the Broncos really have their own quarterback situation there with Simeon and last year's first-round pick that everyone forgets about, Paxton Lynch. I heard Simeon's going to get the start here, and then Lynch will get the start week two. But that's another quarterback battle this offseason to keep your eye on. And then one last thing about the Broncos is their run defense was a little shoddy last year, but I hear that so far at camp it's definitely improved. Their pick from Florida State, I'm forgetting his name at the moment. Give me a second here. The Florida State guy, I hear he's having a really, really nice preseason. He should definitely help a lot with the Broncos, and Domantopeko is new to the team, so it'll be good to see the Broncos in action again. I expect their defense to be improved from last year. It was sort of a down year. But long story short, I'm going to be looking towards both quarterbacks in this game from both teams. So I think it'll be a good game and definitely a good one to be on the NFL Network. And I'm assuming that's why you gave it to me, because it's on the NFL Network, and that's why I had to wait so long to talk.
That's right. That was exactly the thought process behind all of that. Or it could have been poor planning on my part. That could also had something to do with it. We're on to the Friday games, and we begin with the Steelers and the Giants. Bills, Robert, that is your game.
All right. In this game, the couple things I'm looking for. First off, with the Giants, I'm interested to see kind of how that offensive line takes shape. They were terrible last year. Eric Flowers, I want to see if he's going to progress a little bit. He didn't really have a good year last year at all. So I'm interested to see that. I'm interested to see kind of what happens with Evan Engram. Are they going to play him as a traditional tight end role? Or are they going to do what I think they're going to do and kind of spread him out a little bit, give themselves an extra weapon kind of in the slot? I think he's going to be fun to watch. I really enjoyed what he did in college, and I think that, you know, he landed in a pretty good situation. A lot of weapons in with the Giants in New York, and I think in the red zone, given his size, he can be pretty effective. And then the last thing I want to see with them is Wayne Gallman. Wayne Gallman was a fourth-round pick out of Clemson. I want to see if he can challenge Perkins for the top spot on that running back depth chart. The Giants aren't a team that runs too much. However, I think that whoever their starting running back is or whoever can get significant carries is going to be, you know, someone to watch for fantasy football. They'll be fantasy relevant for sure. I think that Gallman, just talent wise, may have more talent than Perkins. So I'd like to see kind of how that plays out. For the Steelers, I'm excited because Josh Dobbs is going to be getting the start. Josh Dobbs is a quarterback from Tennessee. He's a rookie, so he's probably going to get a pretty substantial amount of playing time. And the other thing with the Steelers that I'm kind of looking forward to seeing is their wide receiver depth chart is scary good. They have tons of good guys. So it's going to be interesting to see who separates themselves and who kind of falls behind. I know Hunter, one of their wide receivers, is a guy I'm kind of rooting for because he played with the Bills last year. So I think that, you know, when this offense, he'd be a good red zone threat. He score, you know, he's capable of scoring touchdowns in the red zone, you know, as a big bodied guy. So kind of interested to see where that's going to go. Is Eli Rogers going to hold on to that kind of slot position? I think those are the kind of things to watch for the Steelers.
All right. The next game kicking off on Friday evening, and these games, that game kicked off at 7:00. This game a half hour later at 7:30. It is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Cincinnati Bengals, Neil.
Yeah, Tampa Bay Bucs. There's two things I'm looking for in this game, Jay. Although, to be perfectly honest with you, I won't be watching this game. It's rubbish. I've got some paint I'll be watching dry. I think OJ Howard, obviously the first round pick from Alabama. He was tight end. He was one of my guys in the draft that I really liked. He fell all the way down to them at what must have been pick 18 or so. So yeah, looking forward to see how he's looking in his first NFL season. And of course, I want to see my guy DeSean Jackson. I'm sure James Eagles James will also be having half an eye on DeSean Jackson, see how he gets on, see how he fits into that Tampa Bay offense, which is pretty much unchanged from last year otherwise. In terms of the Bengals, we got a preview from Scott, our Bengals fan, which was really helpful. Thanks, God. What I want to see in that team, I guess it's all about the offensive line, Jay. I think they got... Now, was that 2016 they drafted two offensive tackles in Jake Fisher and Cedric Ogbui? And I think this is now their chance. Ogbui at left tackle, Fisher at right tackle. Chance to go in there and prove that they can play at the NFL level. They're going to be starters. And I think there's a battle at right guard at the moment with Andre Smith and Trey Hopkins. And I think for years, Cincinnati had a really, really good offensive line. I think they lost 2-3 players. Zeitler, they certainly lost. They did actually lose Andre Smith, didn't they, for a while to somebody else. He was it the Buccaneers he played for? Anyway, he left and has come back now. So let's see. They've always had a strong offensive line. Last year, not so good. That'll be a big thing to keep Dalton upright. He'll need to be upright. And really, the other battle going on in their camp is at cornerback. Obviously, Adam Jones is going to be suspended for the first game of the season. And we're looking at William Jackson III, who I believe was the rookie from the previous season, did he miss all of last season with injury? He certainly missed some of it. He's going up against Darquez Dennard, who he'll battle with for that cornerback spot. And if they can take the job in week one, maybe Adam Jones doesn't get his starting spot back. And of course, the other player that everybody will be looking for in this game is Joe Mixon, isn't it? To see the guy who had obviously off-field issues, which were at the forefront of the draft this year, dropped him down. Definitely in the draft. Let's see how he fits in. He's the big hope there, running back for the Bengals. Otherwise, I wouldn't bother watching this game. Watch the Washington game and then move on to something else.
9 p.m. on the NFL Network, the San Francisco 49ers will be at the Kansas City Chiefs. Houston James, are you back?
Oh, I am back and better than ever.
Oh, I was really hoping you weren't, because I really, just before you get into this, I will start with the opening lines from Nick, our Kansas City superfan. All eyes and commentary chatter will be on quarterback Patrick Mahomes, the second's debut in the red and gold, and I fully expect him to put on a show. Yes, I fully expect him to put on a show too, and that would be a show of ineptitude, checkdowns, horribleness. That's what I'm expecting to see out of Patrick Mahomes. Okay, you can continue with this preview.
I mean, even that would arguably be better than an Alex Smith season, though. So, I mean, there is that. Yep, Chiefs Nick goes on to say that he's very excited to see what Tyreek Hill, and frankly, I think a lot of people are very excited as to what Tyreek Hill is going to do against the San Francisco 49ers. And then the other thing that he is most excited about is their defensive end, and I'm not even going to try and butcher this name. There's way too many consonants for it, but it's their second-round rookie. Personally, I'm a little bit more interested on what the Niners have to do. There's a few more storylines there, including the debut of head coach Kyle Shanahan and just how much of a roster John Lynch was able to put together in his debut as a GM. The Niners, according to our Niners superfan at least, have spent the last three seasons first-round pick on defensive line. And so he's very excited to see what they're going to be able to do against either Alex Smith or the rookie Patrick Mahomes II. The Niners also have a quarterback battle to watch out for, but this is for the backup role. They spent a third-round pick on C.J. Beathard, and he is currently competing against Matt Barkley. So who knew he was still in the league? Good for Matt Barkley. Brian Hoyer, though, is going to be the starter for the Niners, and we're going to continue the game of which wide receiver actually plays for the 49ers these days. Apparently, instead of Torrey Smith, they went out and got Pierre Garçon, and they also have Marquise Goodwin now for Brian Hoyer to throw some bounce passes to. He's also excited to see what Carlos Hyde is going to do, but that is all going to be dwarfed by Reuben Foster, who the beat writers are saying goes 1,000 miles per hour on every play, even if he's going 1,000 miles per hour in the wrong direction. So he's made some really good plays in the backfield, but is very susceptible to play action. So that will be fun to see. Obviously, he was there. He was one of their rookies with a lot of hype, and is hoping to kind of bring that Niners defense back to what it was, you know, 3 or 4 years ago before a string of retirements and you know, just overall roster turnover.
Moving to Saturday games now. The first kickoff is at 7:30. That is the Titans at the Jets. Who did I assign this game to?
That would be me.
Oh, hello, Eagles James.
Yeah, welcome back to me. So in this game, if you're fans of either one of these teams, you're going to be happy. And then Jets fans, you're going to want to pray a lot, endlessly, like from here until the Super Bowl and maybe even through the draft. Of course, from the Titans side, you're looking at Marcus Mariota, seeing how he bounces back from his broken leg last season. Now offense, see how they click. Second year under him. Defensively, Dick LeBeau is planning to incorporate some new things into the defense and boost the secondary play a little bit. So keep an eye on them, especially their second-round pick, Adoree Jackson, cornerback from USC. He should get a lot of playing time with the second unit once they hit the field. And I like to say that's it as far as my input on this game, but apparently there's another team from New Jersey that plays on the other side in green and white. And yeah, back to what I said previously, just pray. This team is pretty much a walking disaster. The best wide receiver, pretty much Inunwa, went down with a season-ending injury earlier this week. Combined, the receivers they have on the roster have less than 600 yards receiving total. And that's like five guys at least who have NFL experience over the last couple of years. Defensively, sure, I guess Richardson is somebody to look at. He's a veteran who's still on the team. But to say the cupboard is bare is an understatement. They're going to be leaning a lot on their youth. So pretty much look at everybody who got drafted and everybody in training camp has a shot to make this squad. Any veteran 5 years or over could be looking over his shoulder to getting bumped before the season is out as this team is, quote, tanking and rebuilding right now. I'd also be worried about Todd Bowles, head coach. He may not make it through the season if they play as badly as everyone expects them to. I'm not saying they're going to go 0-16, and I'm not going to say they're going to break the 92 Seahawks record for fewest points in the season, but they're going to come awfully close.
I'll say that they're going to do that.
Which one, 0-16 or the record?
both. So you don't have to. So
you don't have to worry about they're not that. Going 0-16. Come on, guys. That's right.
It's 140 points in a 16-game season. They have to score more than that. That's 9 points. That's 8.8 points a game. If they kick 3 field goals every week, they'll be fine.
We'll but, see. By the way,
can I name one player who I'm looking forward to in this game?
Sure, please. Sure.
I believe Austin Seferian Jenkins, the former Buccaneer who has had a multitude of problems off the field, is going to play. And I believe the Jets are sort of excited for him. So that is pretty much the only person on the offensive side I'm going to be looking for. And then, of course, Hackenberg and Bryce Petty. But
yeah,
everyone
sure.
knows they're going to suck. But, yeah, Austin, I'm sort of intrigued by Seferian Jenkins because he has all the tools, all the traits. He's just he's just an idiot, for lack of a better word. But I'm sort of hoping he can make something of himself.
I'm reading the blurb here on NFL.com. They're suggesting that Bryce Petty's not going to make the team, which
is, that would make no sense.
Well, anything with the Jets makes sense.
No. So why?
So they would just have Hackenberg and Josh McCown, who would be there.
That's it.
Yeah.
Honestly,
or better yet, incompetent quarterbacks who are not named Colin Kaepernick.
Exactly. You know what? There's a point on Colin Kaepernick, Eagles, James and I, we can agree on perhaps a team that Kaepernick could make better. But again, if your whole thing is to suck for Darnold, then you probably don't want Colin Kaepernick as your quarterback. Hey, Cowboys, Kevin, you're up again. It's the Cowboys at the Los Angeles Rams, 9 p.m. kickoff on the NFL Network.
Ooh, nice, NFL Network. What a great thing. Anyway, so I guess I'll stop reading about Natalie Holloway. So the Cowboys and the Rams. The Rams, obviously, don't really care much about them at all. They're a horrible team. But I'm going to be looking at Jared Goff to see if he's improved whatsoever. Highly doubt it. But, I mean, the Rams sort of tried to get him a few weapons this offseason. Cooper Kupp is supposedly having a really nice camp, the wide receiver from Eastern Washington, I think it is. So it would be interesting to see how he plays and how the Cowboys secondary fares against him, along with their second-round pick, who I think was their first pick in the draft, Gerald Everett, the tight end out of Butler. He's pretty raw from what I hear, but they like his potential. So those are two players on the Rams on the offensive side of the ball that I'll be looking forward to. Their defensive side of the ball is pretty much set. Everyone knows it's the strong suit of their team. That's like, I mean, the Rams, they have a good defense. All they need is a competent offense, and they'll be a force to reckon with. So I'm not really looking too much on the defensive side of the ball for them. And now, the best team in the NFL, the Cowboys. What I'll be looking for is, I mean, Dak Prescott's going to play. I hope he only plays one series. Hopefully he doesn't get hurt, and that will be a productive sign. Dez Bryant's going to play a little bit. Always nice to see him out there. Hopefully he can get a touchdown from Dak, so I always love to see him throw up the X. And now, Lyle Collins, I want to see him at right tackle again because he's sort of been inconsistent. We're trying to move him from left guard to right tackle, obviously. I hear his hand placement and his hand technique is really all over the place. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes Cowboys analyst or the writer Brian Brodus, who's very, very knowledgeable, very good scouting dude, said that sometimes he has his hands all the way down at his rear end, which is not effective at all. So the Cowboys offensive line, it's going to be something to look at here, along with the left guard position. Byron Bell and Jonathan Cooper, they're sort of battling it out for the starting left guard position. And I want to say Chaz Green is battling it out with them too, but this is his third year with the Cowboys, but he just always seems to be hurt, never healthy. So I wouldn't really count on him being the starting left guard come week one. So it's really between Jonathan Cooper and Byron Bell, I would say. So if you guys like 320-pound left guard battles, then this is the place to tune in. And then let's see, what else about the Cowboys? Obviously, there's so much to talk about. Rico Gathers, he actually had he was the most impressive player at the Hall of Fame game. He had a really nice touchdown catch. The Cowboys want him to be the heir apparent to Jason Witten, former basketball player at Baylor. All the physical tools. Jason Garrett said he still has a lot to learn, but he's coming along nicely. Much improved from last year, where he spent the entire year on the practice squad. So I'm definitely excited to look at Rico again. And then, of course, some of our younger players on defense. Xavier Woods, I'm looking forward to. He didn't really play much in the Hall of Fame game, which I was sort of surprised, the sixth-round pick out of Louisiana Tech. So him, Xavier Woods, Jordan Lewis, I don't think is going to play. But Jadobe, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing again. Taco Charlton, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing again, who has sort of had mixed reports last week. Rod Marinelli says he needs to do better, but Pro Football Focus sort of graded him out pretty decently against the run. But against the pass, he definitely needs to do better because that's why we drafted him. And then DeMontre Moore. I mean, I know he was just suspended, but he had a really good game in the Hall of Fame, in the Hall of Fame week. Super fast off the edge. He was putting a lot of pressure. A lot of people are saying he could eventually become a starter as the season goes on after he serves his two-game suspension. So that's what I'm looking for the Cowboys. Basically, they're young defensive players and their two offensive line battles, I guess. I mean, Lyle Collins is not really a battle. They're sort of giving it to him, but he needs to improve. So that's important for him to do that. And then I'm just hoping Dak doesn't get hurt. That would be, you know, that would be terrible. Unless Tony came back, but yeah, next game.
By the way, a Cowboy player got suspended. That's not a surprise. Also not newsworthy. Raiders are at the Cardinals, 10 p.m. kickoff. Rob, this game's yours.
Yay. All right. For this game, I think for the Raiders' point of view, there's a couple things. First off, a backup quarterback position. Epic battle between EJ Manuel and Connor Cook. Kind of interesting to see who gets that. The new quarterback coach with the Raiders was EJ Manuel's old quarterback coach, so he does have a little bit of familiarity with at least, you know, some of the people there. I think Connor Cook would win that. I'm only saying that because I've seen EJ Manuel play. The backup running back spot, which I think is a like sneaky important position. Just, you know, not only for football in general, but for this team, for fantasy football. And right now, DeAndre Washington is kind of done most of the work as the number two guy. It's going to be interesting to see if anyone else comes up, gets that spot from him, or, you know, if he can just grab a hold of it, which, you know, from a fantasy football perspective would give him quite a bit of value. And from a team would give him quite a bit of value as well. Given that you have a running back there that didn't play last year and is probably susceptible to some type of injury as the season goes on. Last thing with them, interested to see with the DBs. They signed Sean Smith from KC last year, I believe. But this year he's playing with the twos, even after the good money they gave him. Has he really regressed this far? I'm kind of interested in seeing that. Seeing how all that plays out, you'd think he'd definitely be, you know, playing with the ones for sure. Now, the Cardinals, we've already kind of seen in action. So a couple of things. I'm interested in seeing Buda Baker. He played well in the first preseason game. I'd like to see how that, you know, if he can kind of build on that from last week. The other player I'm interested in seeing on defense is a guy by the name of Cap Caffey, who's an edge rusher. Wasn't really expected to pick up a roster spot with this team, and he played well. I believe by Pro Football Focus, he was rated as their second-best defensive player in the game last week. Can he build on what he did and maybe steal a roster spot from someone else? And the other thing with the Cardinals, I'm just kind of interested in seeing Blaine Gabbert, only because he looked competent. Against Dallas, can he do that again against the Raiders?
It's time for Sunday games. Sunday. We kick off at 1:30 in the afternoon Eastern time on the NFL Network. It is the Detroit Lions at the Indianapolis Colts. Whose game is this?
Yeah, I've got that game.
Another winner for you, Neil.
Yeah, this is a better game. Yeah, Matthew Stafford, Jay, have a guess. How many times has this guy been sacked in his 8 years in this league?
A lot.
Correct. 242 times in 8 years, which is what, just over 30 times a season. That's not good for a franchise quarterback. So yeah, a lot of focus is going to be on this offensive line. And what happened? They lost Taylor Decker, last year's first round pick. He's out for the season, I believe. And guess who's playing left tackle? Greg Robinson. Yes, that Greg Robinson, the new Orlando Pace, as he was, as we knew him 2 or 3 years ago. Kicked around with the Rams for a while, and now is the starting left tackle for the Detroit Lions.
Oh my God! So, that's not good.
Yep, that is that's definitely what not getting better looks like. That's really, yeah. So a lot of eyes are going to be focusing on that Detroit offensive line to see if they can get some sort of unit that can protect Matthew Stafford. On the Indianapolis side, we're again talking quarterbacks. I mean, Andrew Luck, he's been injured so often. I guess, you know, if he was a horse, somebody would have shot him already. But he's still around. And unfortunately, because he's so injured, we're going to be lumbered with Scott Tolzien. And I don't think that's anything that Andrew really wants to see. But he's going to be running out with that first-team offense. And for Indianapolis, unfortunately, their first-round pick in the draft, Malik Hooker, who I think was a big favorite of Rob's, he's injured, as is Clayton Gathers. He's also injured. So a couple of safeties there. Darius Butler will be starting, and also a battle between Mateus Farley and TJ Green for the other safety spot. So something to watch there. And there, again, we're back. Injured quarterbacks usually means a bad offensive line. Indianapolis have also got one of those. Jim Irsay thinks it's fixed, but I'm not so sure. Let's see how that looks going into the season. And yeah, this for Indianapolis fans, this is the first time since 2001 they enter a season without either Freeney or Mathis as pass rushers. So who's going to step up and replace that pass rush for Indianapolis? We'll get our first look at that.
They also lost Bjorn Warner, Neil. Let's not forget.
That's true. I mean, future Hall of Famer Bjorn Warner. Is he still in the league anywhere?
A great question.
I really don't know.
Yeah, there's a question for us for somebody to Google while we're chatting. so yeah, who's going to be the pass rush for the Indianapolis Colts? It doesn't look good. I don't like the Colts at all this year. I hope
someone's Googling it, because I just want to throw out there that NFL.com, once again, with a curious write-up on this particular game, throwing shade at Indianapolis, saying it's interesting to see teams like the Ravens explore options at backup quarterback when their number two is Ryan Mallett and Joe Flacco likely to return by the season opener. And yet Indianapolis, where Andrew Luck has, you know, as Neil has mentioned, been taken out and been shot, is relying on Scott Tolzien as their backup quarterback. So why is there no outrage that Colin Kaepernick hasn't been reached out to back up Andrew Luck in Indianapolis? I that's what I'm taking Jay, by this write-up.
Jay, have you been to Indiana?
No.
I'm not out on a limb here to say it's not exactly a progressive place.
Mm. Well,
yeah, just saying. Just,
that also, and that also just necessitates Ryan Grigson or whoever their or not Ryan Grigson, I think he's out. Whoever their GM is, to have the foresight to protect Andrew Luck. And since he can't even be bothered, or Jim Irsay, since he can't even be bothered to protect Andrew Luck on the front end with the offensive line, like, what makes you think he has the foresight to plan and say, you know what, backup quarterback is definitely a need that we have, because we're going to run through like 6 or 7 quarterbacks with as bad as our offensive line is.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps he'd be doing the folks in Indiana a favor. He'd be throwing Colin Kaepernick out there to the wolves to be, you know, pounded upon. It could be another option.
Are you talking on the field or on the tunnel leading up to the game?
Flip a coin and pick one.
Who knows? I'm going to tread lightly now on this. Neil, saving me with the Bjørn Werner update.
Yeah, I can tell you that sadly, and I hope you guys are all sitting comfortably in a safe place, but on the 15th of January, Bjørn announced his retirement from professional football. Citing
was it a retirement injuries? Or was it a forced exit?
Hey, it's retirement. He was desperately wanted. However, the good news is that Werner will continue his work on supporting young European talents to become players in the NFL. So just expect nothing to come from Europe in the next 10 years then. Because Werner will soon sort that out.
All right. Last but not least, we have the Seattle Seahawks, and they are facing the Los Angeles Chargers of San Diego, 8 p.m. NFL Network. Our first look at the stadium that could barely hold the crowds attending Patriots training camp, never mind an actual NFL football crowd. Who did I assign this lovely game to here?
That would be me, Jay.
Oh, excellent.
Your Seattle correspondent for the day. Mm-hmm. This game brought to you by United Healthcare features a laundry list of injured players that will be sitting on the sidelines cheerleading their team, including the Chargers' first and second round picks. So Mike Williams, their supposed phenom wide receiver, Forrest Lamp, basically everybody on the Chargers is hurt. Usually they wait till the regular season to pull this move. They're getting a jump on it. Maybe it's due to playing in an MLS stadium, feeling that they need to take these dives, and you know they haven't stocked up with that Stocker magic spray to get them back out on the field. But not to be outdone, the Seahawks are also going to have quite a few people injured. Earl Thomas is not injured, although not expected to play. Tyler Lockett is probably going to be on a is probably going to be sidelined, even though he is practicing. Luke Jokel, Jermaine Ifide, they're both out. Russell Wilson and CJ Procise were definitely dinged up at the end of the year. So even though they've had the entire offseason to recover, they are probably not going to be playing. Our Seahawks superfan Justin and Sunday night host. So he may have some live look-ins on this game depending on when he decides to record on Sunday. But he's interested in seeing how Eddie Lacy, the suddenly svelte Eddie Lacy, is going to be looking now that he's maintaining staying on his weight plan, I guess. Thomas Rawls obviously was a bit of a disappointment last year after a breakout rookie year. so that will be interesting to see on just the running back side, as well as if they can come up with some way, shape, or form of a combination of offensive linemen to play that does not result in the immediate death of their quarterback and running back. On the Chargers side, I think if you show up to the game, you get to catch a pass from either Phillip Rivers or one of the backup quarterbacks. This will be in game, not pregame or anything like that. It's kind of a shame to see the Chargers, already a rather anonymous team, go into an anonymous stadium and then have all of these injuries at the onset. It will be good to see Melvin Gordon come back after he was injured last year. And aside from that, good to have football adjacent things in Los Angeles, I guess. I'm sure hoping that the people of LA are glad to have NFL football back there.
Not one, but two games in LA this weekend, as the Rams are on Saturday, the Chargers on Sunday. Cardell Jones, I suspect, would get a lot of run here, Rob.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to play quite a bit in the game. His former coach, his former OC in Buffalo, Anthony Lynn, now his head coach in LA. I'm sure they're kind of, he's their quote unquote developmental guy. So I'm sure, you know, these preseason games, you know, that's what they're made for, is players like Cardale Jones, who has shown flashes, had a nice, beautiful touchdown in week 17 to Justin. God, is Justin Hunter. Name almost slipped me. You know, so he's shown flashes in the little bit that he's played. I think that you'll see him a lot in the preseason.
All right, there you go. The full slate of games previewed for you here on the Next Fan Up podcast. And we did it in under an hour and a half. Impressive, gentlemen. Not saying that the show is over by any stretch of the means, because I could have sworn I heard somebody wanted to say something. No?
We want to address the extension to Devonta Freeman.
Yep.
No.
He was extended, I hear.
I don't want to talk about a guy who basically cost his team a Super Bowl because he was looking the wrong way when he was supposed to be blocking.
That's a bit much, but yeah.
That one play
Matt,
did not.
Matt Ryan doesn't. Okay, Matt Ryan doesn't get killed if Devonta Freeman is actually looking out to his right where he's supposed to be, instead of looking across Matt Ryan to the left where he was.
Okay. I don't believe Devonta Freeman let up 25 points in approximately 7 seconds.
That one play turned to tide.
But there's an interesting aspect. There's an interesting aspect to this contract, isn't there, James? In the sense of he's basically getting paid. He's basically getting paid what running backs were getting paid a number of years ago. Hasn't changed.
Like actually, no. His average salary is going to be $8.9 million, which makes him, aside from Le'Veon Bell's franchise tag, will make him the highest paid running back in the league. Because
right, but what Neil was saying, like 10 years ago, this is what like your average NFL starter was making. They were right around $8 to $9 million. That's actually it's interesting, and it's not all at the same time. The average works out to that, but the way that the contract is structured, he doesn't actually make more than $8 million as far as a cap hit goes until the third year of the extension, which is 4 years from now, because he still has 1 year on his original deal.
Rookie deal.
So in 2020, he'd be a $9.5 million cap hit. Conveniently, though, he can be cut that year at very little cost. so they definitely back-end loaded this contract to make it look like a really good deal. I mean, he's got cap hits of $4.5, $5, and $6, just under $7 million over the next 3 years. After that, which I'm sure he's never going to see, at least the way that the contract is structured, it's $9.5 million, $9.25 million, $8.25 million hits for 2020 and beyond. This is basically it turns into a 3 year contract. So the current year that he has, 2 years on his extension. After that, the Falcons can cut him at virtually no cost to themselves. It would cost them about $3 million on the cap hit. Yeah, I mean, even if they restructured, though, it would accelerate the signing bonus money. So they'd owe him or they'd owe $6 million on the cap that year, but they'll be fine.
The only interesting thing from my perspective, though, is how this impacts Coleman, his backfield mate, considering one, they do split time. Freeman's not the primary back. They literally split time about 50-50. And Coleman goes into the last year of his rookie deal next season. So, well, depending on how he plays this year, say if he balls out, goes for, let's just say, 1150 rushing, about 400 receiving, and say 9 touchdowns, will he be looking for the same, pay increase as well?
I mean, that's interesting, but if they gave Tevin Coleman the exact same contract as Devonta Freeman, they would be, for like the 2019 season against the cap, they would be right at $10 million for the running back position. And then they can get it in a spot where they can restructure Freeman in 2020 or, cut him outright. If they found another option there. So, yes, it's interesting because we'll have to see how it impacts Coleman. But, they could offer Coleman this exact same contract, next year or the year after, and they would still be looking at spending less than $10 million on the running back position and have two, really good running backs for less than the price of Le'Veon Bell.
Rob, you have a stat that you wanted to recite here for us?
Well, I saw it. I saw it pretty recently. I believe it was about 5 years ago that starting running backs, you know, the average is about 10% of the salary cap. And that just, you know, with the way the passing game has kind of exploded, has gradually gone down. And this year, I think it was it's right around 5% for the average starting running back as far as salary cap, which is why you see, you know, the contract numbers that were signed by Freeman were basically similar contract numbers to what LaDainian Tomlinson signed years ago.
Hmm. Interesting.
Is it the only position that's where the salaries are either staying fairly similar or dropping compared to other positions in the league?
I don't know. I just saw this particular stat, but I mean, it's pretty alarming. I mean, it dropped in half. Like
so Neil, to answer your question, the short answer is yes. There's a lot of noise. So like you'll see certain positions, like for a while, wide receiver was the commodity that, and you just have to look at its percentage of cap. So the only position that's going up is quarterback. And as a result, some other position or, you know, group of positions has to go down. You'll see offensive line. There's a blip in there on how offensive linemen got overpaid for a while. And then it was wide receivers. Right now it's like defensive ends are starting to see a pretty good increase, but that will also probably phase out here in a little bit. But running backs over the past, you know, 6 to 10 years, it's just kind of been a slow, steady decline. And they've kind of hit their bottom point here.
And of course, but I mean, you have to take into consideration too, with the quarterback position, that the game's best quarterback is basically his owner's poodle by taking such a tiny amount of cash. So it would be higher if he was taking a proper salary.
Correct. I mean, you can make that argument too for like the rookies that are playing really well. So like Derek Carr. Yeah. Well, I mean, now that he has his extension, right? So that kind of forgets that argument. But you have like Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota. So you do have a couple of players that are really skewing, or they're not even skewing the number down, because you have players like Joe Flacco and Kirk Cousins and even Drew Brees, like in the last year of their contract, that are making, you know, close to $30 million in cash, which, you know, you get one guy that's taking up 20%+ of your cap, and, you know, that's going to make a pretty big impact on the overall market. And that doesn't even include the fact that a lot of backup quarterbacks are making more money than starting running backs. So, you know, like Brandon Whedon, who is arguably not an NFL quarterback, but he's the, you know, the third stringer for the Texans. He's making, I want to say, $4 million this year. You know, and he's going to go in as like the third string quarterback. And so you get a lot of guys out there that you're spending, you know, $15 or $20 million on your starter. And then on top of that, you're spending $3 to $5, maybe even $6 or $7 million on your backup, which is why last year, you know, there was so much talk of even keeping Tony Romo for this year, because as far as a cap hit across the league, the quarterback position, when you roll in Dak's rookie contract with Tony Romo's big hit, it doesn't really make them a big outlier as far as what most teams are putting out for total quarterback expense.
All right. We really got into the weeds on that one.
Mm-hmm, I did.
I'm going in. So on that note, I will end today's show. Send us your emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. If you want to be one of the super fans that joins us on these previews, we have an opening for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Detroit Lions. And of course, any of the super fans that did not submit their preview for this week, Kevin, their opening, those positions could become available in the very near future if they fail to produce those previews for future weeks. So we're always accepting applications. So
I have to, Jay, I have to defend Kevin here because, you know, Kevin, fellow NFC East guy, James, you'll feel the same. It must be difficult.
No, he's a Cowboys fan. I don't feel the same.
There's not a lot to say about Dallas. What can he say? It's like Dallas.
Well, Neil, your heart's in the right place, but I appreciate your defense, and I promise no more previews will be missed, and that's all I can say.
All right, so email us nextfanup@gmail.com. you can tweet us at NFU podcast, and of course check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU podcast. All of these previews are available on our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com. That link is in our show notes, so it's very easy to remember. We are part of Two Pods a Day, hashtag Two Pods a Day. I got to get on the ball there and keep retweeting the two shows that keep getting previewed. I'm off by about a week, so got to make that up here. But if you're interested in listening to podcasts that aren't necessarily of a football variety, Two Pods a Day, the best way to find some new podcasts to listen to. And I think with all of that, I'm going to bring in Landry Jones. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.
Hey, Robert. That Juszczyk guy, he really the top 10.
I think the way his contract worked out, he's the number 9 paid running back this year as far as a captain.
Oh, my God. That's funny.
Even originally, the first thing was, like, the Bills had him. And then, like, the day before or whatever. And then he signed a contract with San Francisco. But it's, like, 4 years, $21 million, I think, was what he signed. Mm. I'm going to look it up now. I'm curious.
Yeah, it's 4 for $21. That's exactly right.
Yeah, but it's, yeah, but I think the money is, this year he's the number 9 highest paid running back, like just back period.
Well, let's see. What would that be? So cash flow, $5 million, $6.
You also didn't give EJ Manuel his due respect. He's great at the hard count, right?
That's the one thing he's good at. That's the one thing he's good at is the hard count. He's the best in the league at the hard count.
The best in the league. No, he might be good at it, that's for sure.
Yeah, he really is. It's hysterical. The Bills used to bring him in just to do the hard count on 3rd and 1 or 4th and 1, and it would work every time.
I mean, we should have marched down the field.
So if you just want money paid in 2017... It looks like Juszczyk is the 3rd highest paid runner.
Oh, my God.
Really?
The 3rd?
Yes. Well, hold on here.
Should I be drafting him in the first round in fantasy football? What's going on here?
Yeah, that John Lynch, what a great job he's doing. Yeah.
Well, I mean, but here's the thing. Like, they could cut him next year and be done.
Yeah, it's a year-to-year deal from the looks of it.
The cash flow for his contract for this year is $7.5 million. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4. That'd make him 5th. Mm-hmm. So, because on cash flow, the only people that are getting more cash are basically the rookies. So you get Leonard Fournette because of the signing or the bonus, and Christian McCaffrey for the bonus. You get Le'Veon Bell because he's on the tag, and then you have Devonta Freeman who just signed a new deal. So, yeah, that's kind of embarrassing.